Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Forgive my voice. I'm just coming out of the back end of a bit of an illness that I know a lot of people have been getting, and I could have waited to do this interview, but I decided I would go ahead, move forward, and just forge ahead. I think that it's an important interview, and I'd like for you to take the opportunity to listen to it as we come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. And we also link to our guests. We'll give the links to you in just a few moments to our guest today. And we ask you to check out the information. And hey, if it resonates with you, run with it and have fun with it. If it doesn't, well, then wait for the next program and see what happens. Or just check out all of our archives. We've been doing this program for 8.5 years. I've been interviewing for, I did an interesting check the other day. For 37 years in the business. Unbelievable. I don't feel that old. The voice might sound that old, but I don't feel that old today. We have a very special guest on the program today, and her name is Christy Reeves, and she is involved with a documentary, and she's involved with a group of people who are coming into this world, and they've been designated specifically as Indigo children. We've talked about this subject before. Rainbow children as well, and we're going to talk more about that. Diana Cooper was also a guest on this program a few years back and sort of talked about this subject as well. And Christy, thank you so much for joining us on the program via Skype.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored and very grateful to be here today with you.
This whole aspect of Indigo children, I have to say that a few years back when the term baby boomer came out. Mm-hmm. I tried to figure out, okay, well, what are the year parameters? Do I fall? Am I one? Am I not one? What's the next generation listing? And so on and so on. And I guess I do fall under that category, but we're not, but that's a little different. That's something that is more from a cultural standpoint. But when you're talking about indigo children, or also, I think the term also is used, or maybe it's a different term. Maybe you can define them for us, rainbow children. I think there's also another term, crystal children.
Crystal children, yes.
All right. Well, maybe we should start there as to the definition. What's the difference between these three in particular?
The rainbow children are kind of the forerunners, as we would say. Many of these kids started coming in the 1960s and the 1970s. Although I believe there have been rainbow kids and indigo kids much earlier, I actually believe that Einstein was definitely an indigo child. And I also believe I love Henry David Thoreau, who was a complete rebel, and he must have been like what we would call a super early indigo. And there was a lady named Nancy Tappe who had synesthesia, and which is seeing the world through colors. And she recognized a certain behavior associated with a certain color in these people's or these children's aura. And it was this indigo color. And the indigos have certain, I would say, trademarks or certain behaviors. They, I always say they're born with a sword in their hand. They are here to change the system. They're here to change the systems that are out of integrity. They are here to pave the way for the next generation. They're really game changers, and that's the reason why their nature is a little bit more rebellious. And they will also speak up. They will point out things if they're out of integrity. The rainbow kids, who have been coming in mainly over the last 10 years, maybe 15 years, have more peaceful nature characteristic. And I believe because the indigos, as the warriors that they are, have already paved the way for the rainbow children. So the rainbow children can just come in and walk their path. They don't have to fight against what is out of integrity. They can just come in and fulfill their mission. So they have a bit more a peaceful, more karma energy. The crystal children are in between. A lot of people say these crystal children have those really, really big eyes that look like crystals. That's the reason why they were named crystal children. And the crystals are really connected to nature, to animals. They love being in nature. They love being around animals. A lot of them choose professions working outside or working you know, as a veterinarian or working somewhere in with environmental causes because of their close connection with nature. But I think the biggest difference is the really rebellious warrior mentality of the indigos and the more calmer, peaceful mentality of the rainbows. But all three categories really have come to this planet to create the changes that we need to make in order to bring back peace and harmony for this world.
Well, it is certainly something that I know a lot of us are watching, and some of us who are, you know, I'm in my, I guess I could say now, mid to late 50s, and I'm watching the generations behind me, as it were, who are coming into this world. And there are times, especially when I'm walking along State Street here in Santa Barbara, and I see the heads bowed, looking down at the devices, and their thumbs are twittering away and the earbuds are plugged into their ears. And my observation is, oh my God, there is no hope for the future of mankind. We are doomed. Then I come across, especially high school kids who come in to do some of the programs, to be a part of, to be guests on some programs here on the station I work for. And the intellect and the compassion and the understanding, the lack of interest in technology, as a matter of fact, talking about, you know, working to move away from technology and getting reconnecting with nature and so forth. And I listen to these young people and I'm going, oh my God, there is hope for the future. We just might survive.
Yes.
And are there, and is there a cutoff age or a starting point as far as these three categories or these types of, and I'm going to say entities that are coming into this world, taking on physical form? I mean, are the oldest ones like in their 20s or teens or in their 30s already? Are they in their 40s? Are there any that are in their 50s? You know, is there a point at which they started coming in, a time period, a decade?
I think a lot of indigos came in during the 1960s and 70s. And according to Nancy Tappa, she said this is when she really started seeing that indigo-colored aura in a lot of the people that she met. But at the same time, because, you know, doing my research and talking to parents who are aware of the term indigo or rainbow, or even interviewing children for our series, it's really interesting how people say, well, my child has some characteristics of an indigo, but he or she also has the characteristics of a rainbow or a crystal child. So I think the boundaries are very blurry over there. So from what I have learned is that there's not necessarily a cutoff date or a certain age group that these kids are in. They kind of are at different ages. And I believe there might be some indigo children who are older, who were born before the 1960s. I believe that there might even be rainbow children that are older than 10, 15 years who have come in maybe in the 70s or 80s.
Interesting. Now, how can you give us a little more background on these, we'll use the term children, as to how this, I don't know if I want to use the word attribute, characteristic, personality, was discovered. And who was this initially discovered by as far as this breed of entities inhabiting and taking on human form to help us to transition into whatever the next evolutionary process of mankind is? Is there anybody that sort of you can turn to and say, oh, this particular individual at this particular point in time began to realize that there are individuals that are different from the rest of us?
I think really the first person who ever mentioned the word indigo was Nancy Tappe. And if you go to her website, her last name is T-A-P-P-E, so it's nancytappe.com. She also wrote a couple of books. One of them I have upstairs. It's called Seeing the World Through Color. And she was the first one to ever mention the term indigo. And I don't know anybody before her who ever talked about the term indigo children, but her talking about it, doing sessions with these kids and writing books about them kind of initiated that term, or it was taken over. I know that there's other people, other teachers, authors who don't use the term indigo or rainbow child, that call these kids starseed children. And that is a very common term that I have found. But Nancy Tappe is really the first one who used the word indigo.
And in terms of, you generally you described their purpose and why they're here.
Yeah.
But maybe we might want to talk a little bit more about that as we continue here on the program. We're talking with Christy Reeves. She's involved with the documentary Children of the Rainbow. It's called Indigo, Children of the Rainbow. And we're talking about this whole aspect of this new group of beings that are here, that have been here for, well, apparently 50 plus years. There is a website that you can go to, the childrenoftherainbow.org. There's also, I'm trying to gather this other website here, songlinesentertainment.com. Is that another one we want to feature here?
Yes, that is our production company website. So it has information about the Children of the Rainbow and a couple of other projects that are actually currently in development about, there's a feature documentary and a narrative feature that we're doing that will address the issue of rainbow indigo children and sometimes their struggles, but also their gifts that they bring to the world. So all the updates will be on Songlines Entertainment.
Now, these children are coming into this world all over the world. It's not just centrally located in one particular country or region. They're coming in globally.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, I have to focus a little bit, and though we don't usually talk about current events on this program,
mm-hmm.
I do want to touch upon this aspect, because it seems like I'm seeing this happen in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
On the political front, not only did we see some major changes several years back in the Middle East, when what they call the Arab Spring, but we're seeing a lot of changes going on in Europe and in England, but in the United States in particular. I mean, we're seeing something happening in our political system that people are saying, this has never happened before. This is brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if we could talk about some of the observations of some of the changes that you see globally, and maybe using these examples I've given, but not necessarily exclusive to, that you see where the indigos, the rainbows, the crystals are beginning that process of helping humanity to make that shift and that change.
That is an absolutely wonderful topic to talk about. And what is also very interesting to see is that there's people of all ages making a great difference in the world right now. And I don't know if you followed it, there's a group called the Earth Guardians, which is an organization of teenagers out in Colorado. And they've been suing the government for the neglect of climate change. And these kids are 13, 14, 15 years old saying, we are the future. We need to preserve this planet for our children. Something needs to be done. And they have made, it's very impressive to me, the changes that this group of children has started to create. I've also seen some of the adult indigos. And you talk about the current events in the U.S. and I was here when Marianne Williamson was running for Congress. I went to a couple of her events over here, and I definitely believe that she has that indigo warrior mentality that has paved the way for a new way to look at politics. A couple of weeks ago, I was invited to a special screening at Paramount Studios for the movie Vax that just came out, that just opened, and it's been all over social media and the producers were in Fox News last week, and I believe that the people behind it, they could, you know, they have what we would call the Indigo mentality, that courage to speak up and point out what is out of integrity and what needs to be changed. And so you see these changes being made all over the world. And then I look at some of these I call them the kids who are in their mid-teens or late teens who have created organizations that are really helping to change the world. No matter if it's Malala, the 18-year-old who won the Nobel Peace Prize for her work on bringing education and speaking up for education for all children for all over the world.
Phenomenal woman. Phenomenal. I've seen interviews with her. Just incredible.
She is amazing. I saw her documentary, the one Davis Guggenheim made, and it's I cried throughout half the movie. I was so touched by her courage and her bravery and her perseverance. And then there's a boy, he's probably not a boy anymore, he's 20, 21 years old. His name is Boyan Slat, and he's in Europe. And when he was 16 years old, he created technology that actually cleans up the ocean. He has spoken at the United Nations. He did a crowdfunding campaign and raised, and don't quote me exactly on the number, but I think it was around $2 million that he raised in the crowdfunding campaign to actually build that technology. And he founded a company in Europe, and they're currently in the process of putting that technology together. And once it is done, there will be technology to actually clean up our oceans.
I'm wondering, is this the gentleman, the young man who, because there was, I think, a TED Talk that he did. I'm not 100% certain, but I remember seeing a website where it was like this long wedge-shaped device that skimmed the surface, and it actually turned the waste. It ground it down, and actually it can be reused for other things on land, like insulation in buildings and things like this.
Exactly.
Is this the same one?
This is the same one. He is incredible.
Oh, man, fantastic.
Yes.
I am so... matter of fact, I find it fascinating that we seem to have... The powers that be seem to have missed the message from nature. They call them gyres, and not to get too far afield here, but they're whirlpools, if you will, that have contained this material, the waste material that we've thrown into the ocean.
Yes.
And so it's like the planet has said, hey, we'll collect it, but you have to come and get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely fascinating. You see, and I'm so blown away because I'm following all these different social media sites. I've been doing so much research, and you see these kids who are literally less than 20 years old, and they're creating this kind of technology. There was a young woman, and I actually was emailing back and forth with her dad because she's in Turkey, and one of our directors was filming in Turkey, so we were trying to get her to set up an interview. And she created a technology that would replace, you know, fracking, like to create fossil fuels out of banana peels. And it was part of a science project she did in school. So, I mean, it's incredible what these kids are doing. There's another young man who is in Germany, and he has spoken at the kids part of the United Nations as well. And he was 8 or 9 years old, and again, it was a school project that they did, where he realized how many trees were being cut down and that trees needed to be planted. So he founded an organization called Plant for the Future, and his goal was to plant 1 million trees worldwide. And within 4 or 5 years, he had reached that goal. He got kids from all over the world to work with him, and then their goal was to plant 1 million trees in each country. And they're close to reaching that goal because it's been like 7, 8 years. So these are children who are, as you know, the rainbow children, as I call them, who are 8, 9, 10 years old or 14, 15, 16 years old and who are contributing to the changing or the healing of our planet. And it's absolutely mind-blowing what these kids are doing out there.
I think that the like I said, these are the kinds of stories that give me hope for the future. I mean, I've placed on the table on this program on a number of occasions. The question as to whether or not man has the, what's the word I want to use here? Does he have the right to continue as a species based upon what he's done to the planet and refuses to change? Now, collectively, maybe, that might be true. But in pockets around the world, and this is where I have a problem with people who argue against climate change. You know, I say, all right, fine, you say it's junk science and you say this and that and the other thing about it. But does that mean that we shouldn't continue to do the things that are being asked of us to clean up the mess that we've made? Okay, so it has absolutely nothing to do with climate change. That climate change is just a natural occurrence. Let's just, for sake of argument, we'll just say that, okay? So then does that mean that we give up the idea of looking for alternative fuels, for of alternative forms of energy to sustain us and our lifestyles? You know, is that what you're advocating? Because that sounds like what's being said is, this is garbage, it's not true, it's just scare tactics, they're using fear, and I'm not buying into it. And it's like, okay, then, you know, we'll just stop all progress and we'll just continue to dump and dump and dump and dump and forget about this kid who's got the $2 million to help clean up the oceans. We'll just continue to let it build up until one day all of the garbage that's out there will now be reaching every single shoreline on the planet. And then maybe, maybe we'll do something about it. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's like, no. It doesn't matter whether or not you think or believe that, that the science is true. The reality is we need to clean the place up.
And what you were talking about, these children that you see where you feel like, do we even have a future? Because the, all the kids care about is the newest trend in fashion or music, and they're on their cell phones all day. But here is what I feel needs to be changed. And this is something we started collaborating with a wonderful group of women at Inspired Parenting magazine. And they came on as our consultants for the feature film script my producing partner is writing. Because we are addressing the topic of education. And currently our education system teaches math, it teaches biology, it teaches chemistry, it teaches history, it teaches literature. But it doesn't teach how to take care of the environment. It doesn't teach certain things that I feel need to be taught. It doesn't teach mindfulness. And I had a Skype call with a wonderful lady in Philadelphia on Saturday, and what they are creating is a program that hopefully might eventually go into the regular school system, where we are teaching ancient cultures, where we're bringing in wisdom from the indigenous people, because we need to teach our children to take care of Mother Earth. And this is not something that is being taught in school. And unless you have a parent who is very conscious and teaches their kid, how is the child supposed to learn about these things? And you know, I see it even when I come to, I was raised in Germany, and Germany is really, really super conscious when it comes to trash. I remember back in the 80s, there was a new law being released where we had to pay for the size of the trash can. So the smaller the trash can, the less waste disposal money you had to pay each month. And there was a new law being released that the supermarkets were responsible for the excessive packaging of the foods. And you could actually leave your packaging at the supermarket and they had to pay for the disposal. And I think it was a brilliant thing to do, because we really learned how to minimize our trash, which is what we need to do. And it's actually being really, really, was being really, I was, it was hammered into my brain. So when I go out here right now, I have a hard time creating excessive trash. But these are things that children are not learning. Where are children learning these things? Where are they learning to take care of our planet? Where are they learning compassion to other children? Where are they learning mindfulness? Where are they learning to take care of nature? It's not part of the school curriculum, and I think that needs to be changed. And I also believe if we do change the curriculum, we do have the chance to create another generation or new generation that is taking care of the planet and that is doing the things that are necessary to heal our planet and to reduce the effects that humankind has had.
Christy Reeves is my guest. We're talking about Indigo, Children of the Rainbow. We encourage you to check out her website, and we encourage you to get involved in whatever way you can. The Children of the Rainbow is the website, thechildrenoftherainbow.org. You can also go to YouTube. You can look it up. They have a channel there as well with all of the information. By the way, this documentary, where can we see it? I'd be very interested in viewing this particular documentary.
We actually have a YouTube channel called The Children of the Rainbow TV, and the interviews that we have been doing over the past few years are all available on that particular YouTube channel.
Stay tuned. We have more coming up here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with Christy Reeves, and she is connected with... As a matter of fact, why don't you tell us, what is your role in this whole project?
I'm one of the producers on the documentary, The Children of the Rainbow, and I'm also the one who's conducting the interviews.
So
a lot of my work is research, getting in touch with people, setting up the interviews, being in touch with our editors, and putting the whole interview together.
Hmm. And how long have you been working on this project?
We started development in 2011, and we filmed the first interview in 2012, which aired in 2013.
Hmm. How did you get involved with, connected with, interested or informed about these individuals, the rainbow, the crystal, the indigo?
I can't remember what year it was. It was in 2007, and I lived in New York. I did a show in New York, and I ended up staying with my friend's mom. She had a house in Long Island, and she offered me a place to stay while I was working out in New York. And one day she came into my room. She said, "I just sent you an email. You need to read this email." I'm like, "Sure." And it was this really beautiful email about the Indigo Children. And if you go to my website, christyreeves.com, and I don't know if it should be out. I actually published the email that she sent to me back in 2007 about the Indigo Children. And she said to me, "Now we know who you are and who I am."
Mm.
And that was the first time I heard the word indigo. And I started reading up about the Indigos and the Rainbow Children. Lee Carroll and Jan Tober have this wonderful book about the Indigos. Dr. Doreen Virtue has another really beautiful book called The Care and Feeding of Indigo. And I realized how much I myself was an Indigo child and how I didn't follow, you know, the paradigm of what I was supposed to do, but create my own path. And this is typical for Indigos. And then a few years ago, in 2011, there is a university for integrative medicine and psychoneurology called Bjorn University. And their big thing is to create resources for therapists, educators, many therapists. So because a lot of these Indigo children are labeled with ADD, attention deficit disorder, or attention deficit disorder with hyperactivity, or social behavioral disorder or opposite defiance disorder, all these psychiatric labels, disorders. And their big thing is to create resources so these kids don't have to be labeled. That makes the label actually even non-existent. And a lot of these kids are being placed on psychoactive medication. So again, the university has been training doctors to help children get off the psychoactive medication or not even prevent them from going onto the meds in the first place. And I got connected to the university and eventually got hired by them to produce the Children of the Rainbow series, which is now in its third season. And it's been such a joy because, you know, and it's interesting how the universe works, because you start working on a project or the information comes to you and then people show up and people in your circle of friends show up and say, I have this issue. And I said, well, I have the series over here. I have the resource. And it's been such a gift to work on it.
Well, and I'm grateful that you have been. It's interesting that you are aware that you are one of the very people that you are doing this documentary about. So I'm curious. I know that because I haven't done it yet myself. In a matter of speaking, how have you approached your indigo-ness, if you will? Because I have to say that this whole thing with these psychiatric categorizations mm-hmm. has actually kind of driven me crazy. Yeah. I am so thankful. Now, I don't know if I'm an indigo child. Mm-hmm. I may be. Be that as, whether I am or not, what I am so grateful for is the fact that I made it through the 12 years of education mm-hmm. without being diagnosed as having hyperactivity or other issues mm-hmm. Where people would have to, they would have prescribed, in particular, Ritalin. This was one of the things that I was so astounded by when I started hearing about that, because I remember being taught in grade school, in biology, that children, boys and girls, learn differently. Boys are a little more hyper, you know, they're a little more active, they're more energetic, you know, they can't sit still for very long as young kids, because that's the way boys are. And that girls, their brains develop a little faster, and that they're going to take in the information and learn a little quicker than boys. And it's not that girls are better than, they're different. And then when I got out of school and they said that they were going to start doing this Ritalin thing because they needed to get control of the classroom and normalize all the kids, I'm going, but wait a minute, you just told me that they were different. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? And that's something that's really bothered me over the years, that I understand what dyslexia is. I don't have it. I know people. My wife has it. She is dyslexic. And I understand basically how that works. But that's different from these labels, ADHD and hyperactivity and on and on and on and on. I mean, the acronyms go on infinitum. Mm-hmm. So are we seeing a shifting away from those diagnoses? I saw something on the UK news channel not too long ago where they're beginning the process of actually shifting away from these psychiatric / psychological labels.
I think that would be absolutely wonderful, but I actually feel like the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Statistic Manual, which is the book psychiatrists refer to for the different diagnoses, I was just reading that back in 1950, there were 150 different mental diagnoses or labels. Mm-hmm. And now we are at 357.
Wow. Wow.
And the founder of the university, I just filmed an interview. He said in one of the classes, I'm just waiting for a texting disorder to come into the DSM and a selfie disorder, because we're turning everything that these kids are or that they're doing into a disorder.
Yeah.
He's like, these kids don't have a disorder. They are beautiful. They're whole and complete. And we're looking for what is wrong with them instead of looking for what is right with them.
Yeah.
And I mean, you so beautifully talked about how everybody is different. And I think this is, again, it's the school system where we need to address the differences in these children and see it as something beautiful instead of as a as something that is broken or wrong with them. And I also see that every child learns differently. I myself, I learn very visually. I need to see everything in order to memorize it. And I remember being in school when I had to study for a test, I had to write everything down or draw pictures, and then I remembered it. A friend of mine is extremely audible. He cannot remember anything unless he hears it. And luckily, there's all these books on tape right now, and he listens to books on tape because if he reads it, he cannot remember. But he remembers it if he listens to it. Other kids are kinesthetic, so they need to feel things in order to remember it. And let's say a kinesthetic child needs to learn about, I don't know, the different plants. For them to learn, the best way for them to learn is actually to take them out into nature and give them a plant so they can feel the plant and touch the plant and see the plant, and that is how they remember. But the school system is set up in a certain way that everybody learns the same way, and that just doesn't work. And another thing about the labels, I saw something, and I keep reposting it on my Facebook page too, that I think is absolutely wonderful. There's a little YouTube video that has been created by the CCHR, the Citizen Commissions of Human Rights, over here in Los Angeles. And you see all these kids with what we would call a psychiatric label, you know, the ADD or opposite defiance disorder. And they're all wearing these white t-shirts with a label on top of it. And then they're actually taking off the label, and underneath it says genius, pioneer, scientist, explorer. And I think this is exactly what's happening with these labels. And instead of seeing, okay, this child has these really beautiful gifts that support this gift because this child is a complete scientist. We need to support these scientific gifts. We're like, oh, the child is not learning the way we want to. Let's put that child in Ritalin. Mm. Or another child might be an athlete or a dancer, and that child might need to move a lot. And that is the reason why the child cannot sit still in the classroom, because he or she doesn't have an outlet for movement. And then the school says, that the psychiatrist will say, oh, that child has hyperactivity because the child cannot sit still. The child might just have to take some extra movement classes after school and then be able to sit still. So it's these simple things that can be changed and that can prevent the child from being labeled with a psychiatric diagnosis.
You know, I sometimes wonder, and I use the term the powers that be quite often because I can't think of any other better term, and hopefully the powers that be become us who take back the power that we've always had. Mm-hmm. But it seems as though the powers that be, on the one hand, are quite benevolent in their earnestness to help, as they put it, to make our society better, our civilization better. Mm-hmm. And that they are almost, it seems, my observation is, it seems that they're oblivious to the damage that they're doing to our society, our civilization, which, you know, again, raises that specter of, oh my God, we're doomed, you know, it's over. Yeah. You take a look at some of the television programs. I mean, I'm often concerned about some of the movies and TV shows that come out, and it's because I'm not that interested in it. It just, especially because of the sound, mm-hmm. I'm not into zombies. It's like, why can't we deal with the living and not the living dead? You know, I know they're interesting stories and there are people who like, you know, those kinds of dramas. Yeah. It just doesn't interest me. Mm-hmm. I'm a scant 56 years of age, mm-hmm. and I'm tired of the dramas. I don't like conflict. And I realize that people say that it's those challenges or conflicts, if you will, that develop character, but I think that there are better, more productive ways of developing character. I'll tell you, some of the programs I really enjoy on television mm-hmm. are what are considered the reality programs, where they are watching people in sustainable situations, in communities. There's one in particular called Port Protection in Alaska, mm-hmm. where people are bonded together. They work together. They're not so independent and so isolated as to be wanting to be separated from all other human beings and do it all on their own. They acknowledge that they need each other. And at the same time, if they need to be separate from each other, they have that freedom too. But that they are interdependent.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is the new ism. Interdependentism.
Mm-hmm.
That's the new way of living that we're starting to look at. And how that manifests, I think, in this area, these types of programs, for me anyway, is a prime example. But instead, we see situations like what happened. You remember what happened with Hurricane Katrina?
Yes.
And you had these people standing on the rooms crying and screaming for help.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if we could, we would, but we can't. You're on your own. You better figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and my heart goes out to people in those kinds of situations. But, you know, you've got to develop a community around yourself. That's really how I think we become sustainable.
Absolutely. And I have to say, and we, you know, you talked about how did I make it through 12 years of school? I was lucky to make it through 12 years of school without being labeled.
Yeah.
And I think my gift was that I was born and raised in an 800 people village.
Oh, wow.
And the village is still only about 800, maybe 850 people by now. Our primary school had less than 40 kids in 4 years, grade one through four.
Huh.
It was less than 40 children. And I said, it's kind of like Pleasantville, because everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
It's a community. The neighbors know each other. I remember I fell off my bicycle when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and I was laying in the middle of the road with my knee scraped open and crying. And the neighbors came out of the house and carried me to my mom and dad's house because everybody knew where I was living. So I was taken care of. I remember being a kid and my mom and dad would just let me roam around outside in the fields because it was safe. There was no crime. There still is no crime in my village. And it was such a beautiful way to grow up. The neighbors still exchange vegetables. Everybody has their vegetable garden. One has zucchinis, the next has apples. So you take some apples to the neighbor, and the neighbor will give you some zucchinis. So it's like, it's this whole community living. And I think that was my gift, my blessing, to have grown up in a small community like that, where there was nature around and where the people just cared about each other and knew each other.
Well, Santa Barbara is similar to that. Matter of fact, I was at the local car wash getting the car fueled up and cleaned, and it's a fairly sustainable car wash. And I'm standing there waiting for my car to be rubbed down and what have you, and I see across the roadway there where I'm waiting, I see a couple, and mm-hmm. he looks awfully familiar, and I wasn't quite sure if it was him or not, and I waited and waited, and finally went, yeah, that's him. And I walked up and I said hello to he and his girlfriend, and this can happen a lot. I had one gal who I worked with. I went to the store, and there she was down one of the aisles, and we exchanged hellos and what have you, and we went our separate ways. I went to my next errand, and there she was. And then I jokingly said, are you stalking me? But I mean, that to me, I love when that happens because it shows just how small a community this is, even though we're close to 100,000. But still, you have that sense of community. And where we live, we're in a rural area up above Santa Barbara in the mountains. And we care about what we're doing on the land and to the land. And for example, I use the analogy that if I lived in the house below me down the hill, I would not be doing an oil change and just letting it run out and down the hill.
Yeah.
I think that's the first and foremost attribute mm-hmm. to our future civilization. That is the framework. And some would say, well, but that's always been. Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
Some would say, for example, New York City, Manhattan, you know, and they talk about the various boroughs that they have there, you know, and everybody knows everybody on the block and this kind of thing. And yeah, you have that type of situation, but it's also a big city and it's easy to get lost and not know your way around and not know anybody and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. In terms of, governments. Now, we mentioned, you know, we got into a little bit into the political aspects, mm-hmm. but in terms of government, education, religion, how do these characteristics of indigo, rainbow, and crystal manifest? Have you seen in your observations?
I don't think that these indigos and rainbows actually look at the separation that religion or cultures or borders have created between us. I actually believe that these kids have come here to kind of, you know, I don't want to use the word end, but to kind of shift these boundaries. Like it's because our world has been so much based on separation, on the, you know, separation through the color of the skin, separation through different religions, separation through different countries, different cultures, different languages. And I think these kids have come here to heal that separation and to create that oneness again, where we don't look at someone from another, you know, where we don't see a separation if someone believes in a, you know, a different religion or speaks a different language. And I'm just going to share a couple of stories with you. I was having lunch with this new friend of mine, and she said, and her indigo, her kids are complete rainbows, starseed children. And she said, they don't see a different skin color when they touch the skin. They just don't see it. They said, oh, it all feels the same. It all looks the same for them. So they don't even see what the separation that we have trained to look at. Then there is a beautiful story of a young man in Israel. And a few years ago, I don't know if you heard of the Israel Loves Iran campaign. And there were talks that Iran and Israel were going to go to war. And he printed posters saying, Israel loves Iran. And he printed t-shirts saying, Israel loves Iran. And then the neighbors were printing these posters and putting it up and wearing the t-shirts. And it went on social media and it went viral. And all of a sudden, the Iranians were posting back, Iran loves Israel. And it created this amazing, beautiful campaign on social media. It actually went into the news. The gentleman who printed that first poster, he was actually on TED Talk. And there was this back and forth between Iran and Israel where it said, we don't want to go to war with you. We love you. It's the government that is promoting war, but we the people, we don't want war. We want to be in peace with you. We want to sit down with you and just have a cup of coffee and talk about soccer or talk about, I don't know, tennis. And that shows me what these indigo and rainbow children are capable of when it comes to politics. And because that campaign went so viral, the I think it was the Israeli prime minister who went up and actually had to address the whole issue. So that power that the people were actually stepping into might have prevented a war. And I think that is what these kids are about. They are here to change the politics. They are here to get rid of the separation that we have been living for centuries now. So it's beautiful. It's very beautiful to see.
We're talking with Christy Reeves, and she is one of the producers of the Indigo, the Rainbow Children. And we're talking about changes that are taking place in our universe, our immediate universe, if you will. We're certainly hoping that things will certainly will get better. I again, as I said before, Christy, you know, I observe both things, you know, and I'm both uplifted and disheartened at the same time sometimes. But I think overall, we're on a good path. We're on a good track. We've had some things happening in the last 15 or 20 years that many people never would have expected, both politically and even religiously. I mean, I think of, for example, of Pope Francis, for example, and his attitude, his perspective. And I don't know, he could be an indigo child for all we know, or a rainbow or a crystal. But he takes what I perceive, and as much as I love Pope John Paul II and was privileged to be in his presence many years ago when he was in Phoenix, Arizona, I just had such an affinity for Pope Francis when I started hearing some of the things coming out of Rome following his selection. And he didn't want to wear the robes, you know. This is not me, you know. That's for somebody else. And then I remember the phrase that he says that the church should be as poor as the people that it's trying to help. In essence, I paraphrase. And then he takes in these refugees, takes them from the Syrian refugee camps, and takes them to Rome with him as an example, saying, "Look, we've got to do something for people." Mm-hmm. These people and others. We had a round table here with some teens, and they were asked this question about what we should do about these immigrants, not just, you know, those that are coming across our border here in the United States, across the Mexican-U.S. border, but also the Syrians and other people who are trying to get away from persecution and potential death and harm and destruction. And we had three or four teens, and three of them, you know, they gave rather long answers to the question. And the fourth young man said one word, mercy. Mm. That's all he said was mercy. And it's like, you know, he spoke volumes with that one word. He really did. So, again, you know, it's wonderful to see the young people. And I find myself... I have to say, I don't know about you, and I'm not even gonna go there with guessing your age or anything. But I find it strange now that I refer to the young people as the young people, as the younger generation, and so forth. And it seems as though there's a certain element in those phrases of maintaining a separation between the amongst the ages. Because I look at my parents who are in their 80s. They just celebrated their 60th wedding anniversary. My wife and I had a chance to go back to Phoenix and see the family and my grandniece, who I had not seen before other than in a picture.
Wow.
And four generations living, a great-grandparents, grandparents, parents, and children. Hasn't been that way for a decade or more in our family. And it's really cool. Mm-hmm. And we all gathered together. And we're family. And so I wonder sometimes if these terms don't just sort of exacerbate the separation, if you will, based on age, chronology.
Absolutely. And then also I see our group consciousness is so much looking at people who are older as becoming, you know, kind of lose the older you get, you know, you reach a certain age and you become worthless, so to say. I don't know how many old people I talked to, and they feel like they have no more purpose. They don't feel worthy anymore of being here. Or,
oh, wow.
And there is, and it's really sad to see. But then you look at certain indigenous cultures where what we would call the older generation, they were considered the wise ones. There were, you know, the wisdom keepers, that there were the sages. And it was absolutely incredible. And I think this is what we also, again, what can we teach our children? What can we teach our elders? Can we honor our elders at these wise sages that they are? Because they have all the wisdom of you know, a life of experiences. So we are actually not creating separation or generational gaps, but kind of connecting them again.
I think that slowly, I think, in certain corners of the world, we're beginning to understand the importance of the elders. I say this, I use this term with all due respect, that I actually find it fascinating that there is a class, if you will, of elders that is referred to, especially on the female side, the feminine side, known as, and this is a positive term that is used to describe the elders, the women elders, as old crones. And the word crone refers to a status, if you will, in the village, in the tribe, and that they're there. They might even be an herbalist, providing healing. They could be the shaman, if you will, the medicine woman, and so on and so forth. Extremely important roles, even at the advanced ages, if you will, that we have. I mean, I don't know that I would ever say that to my mother, you know, but she is the wise woman in the family because she is in her 80s. She's lived the years. I had the great privilege of interviewing my parents last year for a special family gift, if you will. And it was fascinating to hear them talk about not only how they got where they are as a couple, but how they feel about different aspects of life and living. And some would say, well, where can I hear this interview? Well, I'm sorry, it is not for public consumption. But I will share bits and pieces from my perspective as the interviewer. And that was a strange position to be in, too. I'm the son, and here I am asking them these questions. So I had to sort of divorce myself from that role and then talk to them. And of course, you know, when you're a kid growing up, you're never supposed to refer to your parents by their first names. You know, it's mom and dad.
Yeah.
Or you're going to get smacked because it was a sign of disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
But there I am, and I'm using their first names.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite extraordinary. And we have dear friends who are in their 80s, other friends. And we visited them when we were back in Phoenix. And I have a mentor. She's got to be in her 70s, maybe 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, 1980s, I had a big crush on this woman. But she became a very important person in my life as someone who I turned to for advice and counsel. And sometimes I'd call her up from Santa Barbara and I would just sit there and I'd listen to her and hear what she had to say, you know.
Yeah.
So the folks that we surround ourselves with is extremely important, do you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of these kids are so highly sensitive. They feel the energy around us. And for them, it's really important to be surrounded by people who are positive, who are supportive, who are nurturing them. Because they take everything in. They're like little sponges who absorb everything that is going on around them. So we need to keep the environment so loving and kind and positive that they can absorb the loving kindness around them.
Yeah, it's extremely important. Let me ask you about you made a little bit of a reference to it as far as coming into this world and the family that you lived in and the village. And I would ask where that village is, but I do not want to contaminate it by people running there and trying to.
Yeah, it, okay, 100,000 people living there.
We don't want that. No. But I remember thinking about trying to find this place, this quiet space, that if I could just find that place or somewhere on the planet where I could just meditate and ponder and get away from the hustle and bustle of the everyday world. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
And then it dawned on me that if I can find it, so can others.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in spite of the 35 or 40 years or more of searching, I've been on what I call my search since I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
It dawned on me just a few years ago, single-digit years ago, that there is a place, but it's not on the outside.
Yeah.
And no one else can get to it except me.
Mm-hmm.
And for each one of us, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm curious about your spiritual connection. Talk to us about that.
I think I went on that search when I was about the same age as you were, in my late teens. And it was ignited by certain books that I came across. One of the big books I read way back then was Mutant Message Down Under, and the second one that was the Celestine Prophecy. And it really got me searching. I also was very sick in my early 20s. I was diagnosed with an incurable illness, and I found a naturopathic doctor who healed me. And interestingly enough, the symptoms kept coming back, even though there was nothing physically wrong with me anymore. And it got me to start reading Louise Hay and looking at the psychosomatic connection between the mind, body, soul. And that is where my path has started. And as you said, and I still love how you phrased it, we can be in the most beautiful, quiet, serene place, but if we don't have that inner peace, even the most beautiful, quiet, and serene place will not give us that inner peace. And we can be in the most chaotic place in the world, but if we have found that inner peace, we will feel it wherever we go. And I think it has been part of my practice, from daily meditation to different yoga practices I had. I studied Kriya Yoga with Paramahansa Yogananda's association here in Pacific Palisades.
Oh, yes. Love that place. That's a gorgeous location.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And I used to go there every Friday night with one of my girlfriends, and they have 2-hour silent meditations every Friday night. Mm. Every Friday night we were there meditating for 2 hours. And that was a big part of my spiritual practice. I also feel really blessed because my uncle is a Hatha yoga teacher. My cousin is a naturopathic doctor. As long as I can think back, my grandma doesn't take medication. When she has an illness, when she doesn't feel well physically, she gets a crystal. So she has given me crystals ever since I was a teenager. So I remember my dad's doctor, who was a regular GP, coming over to my parents' house with a dowsing rod. Oh, and wow. Then my GP was a... Again, she went to medical school, but she did homeopathics and acupuncture, so I was raised with homeopathics. So I had also, you know, the physical alternative aspect in my life ever since I was a kid. Mm. And I feel it's so important for us to have that routine, that, you know, that mindfulness routine in every day of our lives. And my big thing over the past years has been, instead of, okay, I'm going to go to yoga class for 90 minutes and have my mindfulness for 90 minutes, has been to look into having mindfulness with everything I'm doing. To not have that separation between, okay, I'm going to go here and work on my documentary, and then I'm going to do a yoga class, and it's two separate things, but to have that spiritual aspect as I am working on the documentary, or as I am returning emails, to actually practice, have every single step of my life or every single aspect be connected to mindfulness. And even just to share a story with you, we hired a new director at the beginning of last year, and he directed 3 interviews, I think, now for us. And bringing that mindfulness even into the interviewing process, every single time we finish an interview, I say thank you to him. And he says, no, thank you to you. Every time I do an interview with you guys, I feel I'm being healed. Hmm. And that's a wonderful affirmation. He said, just listening to the stories people are sharing or being part of this energy, I feel like I'm receiving healing directing your interviews. And I feel like that is bringing mindfulness to every single aspect of our lives.
Hmm. It's the people that we surround ourselves with that really tend to make the difference in our lives. And I've said this on many occasions, that we as human beings, in our quest to find the still small voice to listen to and hear and follow the promptings, to find our life's purpose, it is so important. And I would like you to elaborate on this, but from my perspective, it's so important that we understand that we, and I use this term in the broadest sense that it can be used, not pejorative. Mm-hmm. We have the freedom of association and disassociation. Mm-hmm. If an environment, a group, an individual is not serving us mm-hmm. in the context of our life's purpose, our goals, then we have every right to say, you know, it's been a nice ride, but I need to let you go.
Mm-hmm.
However, you would phrase that in a tactful and kindful way.
Yeah.
you don't want to generate more karma in that regard. But you understand what I'm saying, and I'd like
Absolutely.
To have you elaborate on that as this applies especially to the indigo, rainbow, and crystal mm-hmm. individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've seen that in my own life, and where I did have people come in and feeling, oh, there's something beautiful we can co-create, only to find out that they weren't aligned with me, that they weren't in my highest and best good, and I did have to let go of them. What I also have learned, and I share with many people, is that I see my environment as a mirror of my inner world. So when there are people in my environment who are, I don't know, unkind or disrespectful or flaky, unreliable, I look at what in me needs to be healed. What is this person reflecting back that might be within me? Because we create our reality through our thoughts, through our emotions. So if someone is being unkind to me, is there maybe an aspect within myself that is unkind to myself, that I need to nurture, that I need to heal, where I have to show more kindness to myself? And I have found, I've been practicing this method for many years, and I have found that by looking at my environment that way and seeing my environment as a reflection of my inner world, my environment has shifted tremendously over the last 10 years. It's incredible when I look at the people who are in my life, the people who have come into my life, or the people who have stayed in my life, how our relationships have changed, and how I'm being surrounded by really incredible and amazing people. And I didn't have that. And I think this is also talking about the subject of the indigo and the rainbow children specifically. Indigos and rainbows are really sensitive to the energies of other people, as we said. But they also have something that I call a BS detector. If someone is not in integrity, these kids will know about it. They will know, they will pick it up right away. That's the reason why these kids will not study for a teacher who doesn't like to be a teacher, because they know that this teacher doesn't like to be a teacher, and they will say, well, if this teacher doesn't even want to teach, why should I learn for that teacher? But they will learn for a teacher who is very passionate about what he or she is doing. The same to peer group. They will know if these kids are fake, if these kids are mean, if these kids are disrespectful and are just hiding it. They will see through lies. And one of the big things that I've seen with indigos and rainbow children is that often they can be loners, because they, on one hand, they cannot be around people who are out of integrity. And second of all, they will feel the energy of people who are negative. So they don't want to be close to them, because it's too much on their little system. Another thing is, a lot of these kids also have really beautiful intuitive abilities. And sometimes they would like to share the things that they're picking up on with the other children, but these other children, if they're not ready, will ridicule them. So a lot of these kids are really need to find their tribe, their peer group, in order to, you know, to have that support.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've recently, I can't remember who shared that story with me, because the kid was seeing spirits, and that kid wanted to share it with other children in school, and the other children were laughing. And I said, that kid needs to find her tribe so she can share about these spirits. And other kids will say, yes, I see spirits too, without feeling ridiculed, but having that confirmation. And it was really interesting, because you interviewed Diana Cooper on your radio show. We just published the interview I did with her last year for the Rainbow Kids series. And one of the things she said is that a lot of these kids have these intuitive abilities, and they will see, I see this, or I feel that. And then as adults, we really need to be in support of that. because if we say, oh no, you're wrong, there are no spirits in this room, or there are no bad energies over here, it's either affirming that the kid is wrong or the adult is wrong. And that is a horrible place for a kid to be. So one of the big things is to really acknowledge the gifts of these children when they do have these intuitive abilities.
It's not good for either to be wrong. That there needs to be that understanding. Working for the Christian radio station for so many years as I did, I eventually did take the position that if somebody came to me, regardless of belief system that they were living with, if they came to me and said, I had thus and such experience, who am I to say that they didn't? You know? Mm-hmm. I wasn't there, you know, and I would hope that the same would be true if I said, you know, I just had this thus and such experience, and I'm hoping that somebody would listen to me. I mean, my wife is sharing with me all the time about different experiences that she's had over her lifetime, and sometimes she'll even use the phrase, you probably think I'm crazy, and I say, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish you would stop saying that because I don't think that you're crazy. you know, I am doing everything I can not to judge in any way, shape, or form, what you're telling me, because you need to be validated, and that experience need to be, and one day you may come across somebody who will be able to say, yeah, you know, I had the same experience, and off you, the two of you go dialoguing about, you know, what the two of you have experienced, and then you can share commonalities and insights and so on and so on and so on. You mentioned an author who I've also read his books, James Redfield in The Celestine Prophecy. And to me, one of the core messages in that book, in that series, has to do with the fact that we have messages for each other and that it behooves us to share them so that we can help others. And I use the analogy of a puzzle that everybody's putting together their own puzzle. Mm-hmm. And that we need to share those messages because it helps the other to build, to put those pieces of the puzzle together. Yeah. And we need to share ours, and we need to be receptive when others are sharing with us. Mm-hmm. And so that was, I've always found the writings of Mr. Redfield. He's one gentleman I'm still working on getting on this program, and I'm hoping one day to do that.
That's amazing. Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Before we wrap up the program, first of all, I want to let our listeners know that this is Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Christy Reeve. She's one of the producers of the Indigo, Children of the Rainbow. And, of course, you have several websites, including ChristyReeves.com. And you may have answered this question. I have three final questions for you. You may have answered these questions throughout the program, but I'd like for you to address them if you can, if you wish to, before we wrap up. But I would also like to extend an invitation to you that if you find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. It just fascinates me.
I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
First question is, who is Christy Reeves?
Who am I? I think I'm a... First of all, I'm a human being, so a little rebel, activist, documentary filmmaker, actress, artist.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
My goal is to make the world a better place. I hope that with the movies that I'm doing, because I believe that films... media has a powerful gift to change the world, and if we can use it to change the world for the better, it's an absolute gift. So I'm hoping that with the movies that I'm creating, I can contribute to making this planet a little bit brighter and more peaceful.
And what is your life's purpose?
It's interesting that you're asking that. And I think I just reconnected with my Dharma that I knew about as a little kid. As a little kid, there was a song that won the Grand Prix de Eurovision called A Little Peace. And I believe that if I sang that song every single day, that would be world peace. So I feel that with the media that I'm producing, helping the children and... if we help the children, we can. I believe we can create a better future. I'm hoping that with the media that I'm creating, I can contribute to making this planet peaceful again. That is my mission.
Well, I support you in that intent in every way. And I thank you again for joining us here on the program. And I encourage people to go to your website, ChristyReeves.com. You can find out all about the Indigo, Crystal, and Rainbow Children, the documentary Indigo, Children of the Rainbow. And again, we thank you so much for sharing with us and taking so much time to do so here on the program.
Thank you so much, Richard. It was such a gift to be here with you and talk.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until next time, with a fresh voice, I hope, I'm Richard Dugan. Love to Lal.